Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
So welcome in everybody to episode number 208 of Linux in the Ham Shack, where it's our deep dive episode. And we are going to be taking a deep dive into logging. Logging for your amateur radio station. Because we talk about logging an awful lot, and we mention an awful lot of logging software, but we don't really get down into the meat of the matter. So we're going to do that today. And Bill, since you decided to pop this topic onto the Etherpad for the evening, I'll let you sort of lead the discussion.
Oh, boy, I can't wait.
Wow, he sounds so excited.
I know.
Yes, very excited. Yeah, I was talking to Russ earlier today, and I was trolling the IRC chat rooms, as I normally do. And I talked to VA3DB in the RedditNet chat room, and he was just telling us how awesome FreeBSD was. And I was like, okay, what do you do with FreeBSD? And he's like, oh, I do, you know, WSJTX. And I'm like, oh, that's great. So what do you use for, like, your regular logger for all your stuff? And he's like, well, I don't really log. And I'm like, you don't log? So what do you do to confirm contacts? Well, I don't really care about that. It's like, oh, okay. Well, this kind of put me on a tirade of trying to get FreeBSD on my machine, but that failed miserably. So I decided we'll talk about logging instead. So here we are in talking about logging and why should I log? I mean, that's like the number one thing that we all ask ourselves. Back when back when amateur radio was getting started, you know, as an amateur, you were required to log every time you got on the radio, every bit of everything you did on the radio. So, we used to have to log everything. But today, you know, we do have that option of not having to log. But why should you log? And one of the many things we talk about with logging, the advantage of doing it, not only you know who you work before, so I mean that's one thing, but you also know like what bands you were on at what time of the year and at what time of the day. So if you wanted to go back and look at what bands were open last year on February 12th at 7:20, well, or whatever time it is right now for you. You know, you would say, oh, yeah, I was actively working 40 meters then. So let me turn on 40 meters. You know, so that's one other thing that you can look at as a reason as why you should log. Mainly, you know, it is to keep track of everything you do on the radio. So you can have that bit of information behind you when you want to go back and look at that. And so you can, kind of keep track of what you're doing and how your performance is, right? You know, we all want to know, like, you know, how many contacts did I make? You know, it's not a contest, you know, although we do log in contests, but it's important to know, you know, those kind of details of our activity. And what would you say is a good reason why you should log?
It's definitely useful for historical information, but I'm kind of curious from your perspective, do you actually go back and look at, and you know, from a performance analysis, I mean, do you actually think it's useful to know about 40 meters at a certain time of day on a certain day of the year, especially since the solar cycle fluctuates all the time and the ionosphere is different all the time? And you can make some generalizations about time of day and what bands are good and things like that, but it's not always the case because there could be a solar storm on a particular day or something like that. I mean, I think it's useful from a perspective of knowing if you've talked to somebody before, and especially if you're going to exchange QSL cards or something like that, it would be nice to keep track of, you know, how often you've talked to somebody, for example. But yeah. I don't know from a ham radio performance perspective if it's really that useful. I don't even think I've even considered doing logging for that purpose.
Well, you know, I do participate in a little bit of radio sport. So I tend to use my logs, which I, you know, put everything into one logger, to kind of go back and look at. It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do the California CUSO party this year. How did I do last year? And where was my, you know, what were my money bands and stuff like that? You know, where did I spend most of my time? Where did I get most of my contacts? You know, that kind of information is kind of valuable. But yeah, we do have the changing solar cycle. And if I were to look at my log from 7 years ago compared to today, you know, I would see the fact that, you know, wow, you know, 20 meters was open and 40 was closed. You know, I could only work in state on 40, but like today you could work 40 all over the US and, you know, 20 is, you know, hit and miss, you know, 20 is acting like 10 would have been 7 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, it is useful for that. Yeah. That point. And since we do have to deal with the solar cycle thing, sometimes that information is lagged, you know, because the last year we had more sunspots. This year we don't have as many. So it's always changing. And yeah, so I mean, year to year, probably not as critical, except for like when I look at my radio sports stuff, you know, I always want to kind of go back and look at that information and see that. But yeah, I also agree, you know, you're working in a station, you know, did I work them before? Especially if you're on WSJTX. You know, you're out there making a million contacts a second, right? You know, because it's all fully automated. You know, you got to be able to not waste your time, you know, hold like minute and 15 seconds of your time working somebody you already worked before on the same band. So, yeah, I mean, you know, everybody wants to save a minute and a half of time, right? Like, I don't know, go get a cup of coffee or something.
So I have a question for you that's not really on the list of things that you have here as topics to discuss. You talk about actually going back and doing historical analysis. So do you do that manually, or do you have some sort of a statistical analysis engine that actually helps you pull out useful data from your backlogs?
Generally I'll look by date. So yeah, I'll just query into the database and look at by date and what I did. And then I'll look at the numbers. If I, you know, the software itself, CQR log has some statistics that it has for built-in stuff, like doing IOTA stuff, worked all zones, worked all contests, or continents and states and stuff like that. But for do more, you know, traditional analysis, I'll probably pull that file out into like calc and then just run some numbers and look at the time period and, you know, draw some pretty graphs. And yeah, it's I think it's some useful information. And, you know, the more data centric our look at this stuff becomes, you see more and more of it. I mean, did you just like we talked about, what was it, like, I don't know, maybe like 10 episodes ago, we were talking about, you know, the rise and fall of F8 and JT65 and stuff like that, and they were able to pull all that data out of club log and produce some really really interesting visuals on the phenomena that is FT8. And I mean, you can do that similar kind of stuff and analysis on the data that you save on a regular basis in your logger.
And in the chat room, we have a couple of comments about doing data analysis of your logs. And Gene, BX8AAD, says he uses LibreOffice Calc in order to do some analysis. And you've actually got LibreOffice Calc as a solution for doing logging, as basically... probably as low a level logger as you can get, which is basically one step above pen and paper. It's electronic ink, basically, for keeping your logs. It's certainly a simple way to do it. And Ted says for analysis, he lets EQSL do it for him. So I guess that's one way to do it, for sure. There
is good information on those online systems, and we're going to talk about those as well. You know, now that we kind of decided that, you know, well, there's a possibility I should be logging. If you're not, you know, if you're already logging, obviously that doesn't even, you know, pertain to you. You know why you're logging. The things that go along with why you should log is what you should log. And before we get into the software, I just kind of want to just touch base on this. A lot of people like to log, you know, casual contacts, let's say on a repeater. D-Star, DMR, Fusion, you know, whatever you may, you know, the one exception there might be like TV or something like, but generally those contacts that go over repeaters and stuff like that, You know, a terrestrial-based repeater. So we're not talking a satellite. That's completely different. But a terrestrial repeater or an internet-based contact, those generally are not loggable for, let's say, awards-based tracking. Now, there are contests that are specific to this, like I think there's a D-Star QSO party and stuff like that. You know, those kind of contacts at that point become a contest. So you do log those in a contest logger. But in general, I would say most people do not log those because they're generally not awards-based. And these are people that are chasing paper and stuff like that. Now, for fun, yeah, I mean, you know, I remember when I first became a ham. You know, I got on the repeater, I talked to a few people, we traded some QSO cards and stuff like that. It just kind of got me to know them and them to know me and stuff like that. It was a little more of a more personal touch to kind of go beyond that, just that contact on the repeater. And that's perfectly acceptable. And, you know, you can't confirm the same grid square on a repeater or something like that for like a VHF, VUCC or something like that. But, you know, it is something that, you know, if it's not going to be for that kind of thing or not for an awards based, and if that's what you're tracking in your logging system is all your awards based stuff, you probably don't want to log that stuff. You can, but you don't have to. You know, that's one of those contacts that are just, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, I talked to somebody on Reflector 25, blah blah blah, on D-Star. And, you know, you might want to trade a card with them just to maybe share that personal contact and stuff like that. The, you know, you don't get credit for that state, I don't think, or that country or anything else like that. So, you know, beyond the fun-based portion of that, you know, you're probably not logging it. Now, SWL people, you know, that are listening for you, they'll log it and they'll send you an SWL card. I know I've received several over the, you know, the past 20 years that I've been a ham, and I always respond to them. And, you know, those guys are taking time, they're logging and stuff like that, and, you know, it's pretty cool.
Well, I can honestly say I've never received an SWL listener card, so.
Really? Yeah, yep, I've received several.
Well, that's because you're awesome, Bill.
Yeah, I know, yeah, I'm just Mr. Ham Radio here, so, yeah.
So, Cheryl's looking bored, but I was going to ask her, as someone who hasn't really participated in the hobby yet, but you know about getting QSL cards, because you see me getting them all the time and all that. So would you find it, since the requirement is no longer there that you need to log all your contacts, if you were making contacts, do you think you would use QSL cards as a way to keep a memory of the way you've, you know, been on the air, or would you actually actively log to go back for information?
The problem with QSL cards is after a while you run out of storage space for them.
Well, there are electronic ones, and we're going to talk about electronic QSL cards here in a little bit.
Well, so, right, but to actually get paper QSL cards.
Well, yes. And
they do take a lot of space.
They do take a lot of space.
Yeah.
And the electronic QSL cards can be a reflection of an actual QSL card, because sometimes you can have the picture of a physical QSL card in an eQSL, but sometimes you don't. And sometimes, the same way that having a book is better than having an e-reader, it's nicer to have an actual
paper copy. I see pros and cons with both. You know, the pros of having the actual honest to goodness cards is you've got them. The only way you're going to lose them is if your house burns down.
Right,
a
house fire, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or you just lose them.
Or you just lose them, yeah. But storage is an issue. As, you know, if you're on the radio occasionally, no big deal. But if you're on the radio constantly, you start getting thousands of QSL cards, that becomes an issue very quickly.
Well, and a lot of folks don't actually send QSL cards, or they send through bureaus and things like that. So if you're looking for a QSL card, somebody from, you know, the Ukraine might send you one through their QSL bureau, and it might take you 2 years to get
that card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but now, with eQSL cards, though, if something crashes, all that stuff is gone.
Well, with eQSL specifically, and like trusted QSL, that's all stored on a presumably backed up central repository. Well, we'll just assume they're backed up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And if they're not, they're gone.
Yeah. But you're also, if you're doing things electronically, you also need to maintain your own backups for sure. I mean, you can't rely on where you're sending those electronic QSLs. I mean, you've got to have your own copies.
Well, right. But we've also faced the problem of having hard drive failures and me freaking because we thought pictures of my dad were gone.
Hard drive failures at your place? Never.
Yeah, no, never. No, in the happened like 6 months ago. We thought that we had lost all the pictures of my dad. And I was basically crying all weekend while Russ is like, calm down, I'm trying to get them.
Well, let's let the cat out of the bag on this. I mean, you know, the paper QSLs have definitely decreased over the years. And that's because we have the ability now to do electronic QSLing.
Right.
Right.
So, you know I personally do not send cards out unless someone has requested a card.
Right.
So, yeah, I just... You know, unless there's something I want, like if I want the card from somebody, I'll send them a card first and I'll send them a, you know, self-addressed stamped envelope and hopefully I get a card back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And Russ has spent the whole weekend though working on cards.
Well, that's because I'm doing cards for a Worked All States net, or actually several Worked All States nets, and they actually require that you send cards. And I have been notably lax in doing that. So
yeah, because you said you were sending cards out that were 10 years old.
Well, that was for a different thing. I had one card that I don't know where I got it from or when I got it, but it was clearly back in sometime in 2009. So sorry, whoever that was, but you are actually going to get a QSL card.
They're probably looking at it like, what?
Right. Now, WA0EIR in the chat room says that EQSL now has an EchoLink award for 25 QSOs. So that would be an awards-based tracking. So, yeah, I mean, there's a reason to log an internet-based contact. And there might be very specific things to that. You might not be able to do that in a conference node. You might have to do a direct connect and stuff like that. I don't know the exact rules of that with EQSL. And we have another person in the chat room just said hi, KF7IJZ. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Yes, and, welcome. Welcome to this crazy discussion about logging.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, we're deep diving into the logging here. So let's move on to the sharing the log.
You did point out one thing, though, about awards tracking, and that is definitely a reason to be logging. If you are actively chasing awards of any kind,
yes,
you really need to be logging. I mean, there's really no two ways around that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're not going to get an award by paper, pen and paper. I mean, you can. We used to do that all the time, but I wouldn't recommend it. It's not something that's easy to do because eventually you're going to have to put it into an electronic format to get it to one of these many services that we're going to talk about here. That basically do the confirmation for you. Basically, these are online log sharing programs or log validation. Platforms, I guess we could call them, not necessarily programs, take care of that, matching your contact with the person you contacted if you both share your log to the same system. So the ones we're going to talk about are Logbook of the World, which of course is the ARRL one, and that's the one that you have to use the trusted QSL program for, and of course that is available in Linux and Mac and Windows. EQSL, that we mentioned that several times already. That's a log sharing platform. ClubLog, HRDNet, QRZ. Yeah, that's the famous call sign lookup that everybody hates. No, not everybody.
Well, certain people hate it, myself included.
Yeah, and there's possibly more that I'm not listing. I mean, can you think of any that aren't off the top of my head here?
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
These are the
big
ones.
Yeah, they're definitely the major ones.
The top three are Logbook of the World, EQSL, and ClubLog, by far. Everybody else is kind of, you know, ancillary. You know, QRZ is, very basic logging. I think you can even log a hello when you get on the webpage there. So it might not be quite as useful. But, Logbook of the World, EQSL, and ClubLog all have their own internal awards programs that they'll basically work your log against others and then also look at against metrics for certain awards programs. Like was just said in the chat room, there's an EchoLink award on EQSL. It's not in Logbook of the World and it's not in ClubLog. Logbook of the World has basically all your ARRL tracking stuff. So your Worked All States, Worked All Continents, Triple Play, Worked All, five band awards and stuff like that. It is a little bit higher barrier of entry to get into the Logbook of the World because you do have to get a certificate, and that certificate does have to be renewed. It's not impossible to do. It doesn't take very much for a U.S. person to do it. it takes a little bit more effort for a Forn or a DX station to get a Logbook of the World entry. EQSL is a pretty much a wide open platform. They have the ability to also do the same SL service. Some of the EQSL stuff, like, here's what happens. The EQSL log confirmations are not good for awards at the ARRL, as far as I'm aware. You have to use their service in order to get the ARRL awards. And vice versa, I don't think you can use the Logbook of the World to, you know, dump into EQSL, although you can dump the same log into both places, and then you can get awards from both. So, I mean, they both have their own worked all states, worked all zones. Logbook of the World also supports CQ. I think there's several CQ awards programs that run through there now, worked all zones, and they just added one, too. I can't remember which one they just added. I'll have to check their website here shortly. But what's the luck here? So you have all these shared programs. You're sharing your log. You know, what is the confirmation rate? I mean, what's the confirmation rate when you send out a card? Do you always get your cards back?
Are you asking me if I get my cards back? No, because I'd say the confirmation rate on paper QSLs is pretty darn low, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when you send the SASE, sometimes you might not get it. Now, I know I'm guilty, too. if I get it and I'll set it aside, and it'll become a stack of stuff that eventually is like, oh, yeah, I got to do all these QSL cards. Because, I've had guys do send another card, another SASE, and I really feel bad. And I'm like, oh, I send their other SASE back with it. It's like, sorry, I know I'm a douchebag. I didn't send your log back. There's people that really want their card back. Now, I gave you my personal experience with Logbook of the World, because I pulled my numbers up here just to see the confirmation rate. So through Logbook of the World, this is domestic and DX contacts. You know, I've pushed in 5,850 contacts in there. It has confirmed 3,481 of those. So 60% almost. 60% of the contacts are confirmed through Logbook of the World, which is not bad. I've heard of a lot worse through Logbook of the World. So it's not a bad rate, and it automatically tracks all your awards for you if you put in for those. Of course, you know, it's like anything. Yeah, you can get the award, but guess what? You have to pay for it to get shipped to you, right? When you apply for it, you send a check. And this seems to be a common theme amongst all of them, because, you know, they really don't charge for the service. There's no charge for using Logbook of the World. There's no charge for using EQSL. There's no charge for Club Log that I can think of, unless you do the OQRS thing where you buy QSLs. Help fund DX Expeditions with paying for a QSL card. Not like you can really buy a contact on a certain band at any time, but, you know, I'm just saying. HRDNet, I have absolutely no idea. I know you can use it and not have HRD, because that is available through... Hello, dog. And QRZ, you know, again, you don't have to pay for the log, but I'm not sure if confirmation is part of that. At some point, you do have to have a subscription service with QRZ. So, you know, but I don't know of any specific QRZ things. It's really kind of hokey at best. It was kind of like just kind of slapped on several years ago as kind of an afterthought of the program, as QRZ became this bloated beast that it is today. But not to take anything away from that, you know, not like, you know, what Russ hates about it, but,
it's a simple thing that I hate about it. I mean, just having to log in to do simple data queries when you don't even have to do that on the FCC website, it seems pointless to me.
Yeah. So almost all of these systems require you to push a ADIF file. And this is basically a generic formatted XML file that has your log information, you know, includes the contact, the date, time, band, mode, you know, your on time, off time, signal reports and stuff like that, and grid squares and any other information, like for satellite, it'd be the satellite itself and stuff like that. So you have to create this electronic file. So you're not pen and papering that. Yeah, you can get out your text editor, you know, bring up VI or Emacs or, you know, Notepad, and, you know, start typing away your little carrots and everything else. But, you know, at some point, you'll either commit suicide or you'll actually start using an electronic logger. So it's important that you find a logger that kind of does most of this stuff for you, because it is slightly painful to not terribly painful. I mean, to hand sign ADIF file to send up to Logbook of the World. I know you do that, right?
No, I don't hand sign everything. I mean,
well, not hand sign, but I mean, you manually sign it with the application.
Yes, I use the application to sign it. And that's the one reason that the ARRL only likes logs that go through Logbook of the World, because apart from them having the central repository for that information, they also do actually cryptographically sign those logbook entries. So they are like cryptographically verifiable.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and as WA0EIR said in the chat room, for EQSL, you need to be a current member or make a donation basically, to receive one of their awards. The same thing. You gotta pay for the awards, right? You know, cause they're right. You know,
and Gene says his rate is 29%, so very, very low. But he does a lot of DX work. So, and you know, I think that goes both ways, because we think of DX as anything outside of the United States, of course, and a lot of those stations don't respond, or they respond very, very slowly. And I kind of feel like the other way around is also true. So if you're an Italian station or an Estonian station or something like that, you probably get a pretty low rate from the U.S. as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially for cards and stuff like that, because it has to go through the Bureau. You know, it is slightly advantageous to have them on that program if they're going to even bother to work U.S. stations, just because it makes it easy for them. That's why they're part of Club Log and EQSL. And, you know, you just have to figure out how to get from there to Logbook of the World on your own, which is most likely sending a card through the Bureau to get a confirmation. But so let's talk about some of the applications that make this easy.
And let's also point out right off the top that if you're going to use any of these applications, you probably want to use one that supports ADIF format. I'm pretty sure all of these do, and they might even have their own proprietary, I don't want to say proprietary, it's not really the right word, but their own format or something like that. But you want one that has a centralized, easily recognized format, so that if you happen to use three different loggers for three different applications, or use perhaps a built-in logger for an application, that you can export it to a file that you can perhaps concatenate together and then upload fully to Logbook of the World or EQSL or something like that, and you don't have to worry about formatting. So
yeah, exactly.
So just be conscious of the format that these loggers can save in, and just be consistent across whichever ones you choose.
Yeah. And we're only going to mention programs that run in Linux because, hey, we're a Linux podcast. So, number one, we're going to talk about CQR log. And we've mentioned this, you know, numerous times. Pretty much every time I talk about logging, I talk about CQR log. I think it's probably, I would say, the gold standard for Linux logging if you want something fully featured.
Gold standard for Linux logging means Bill uses it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if I'm using it, it's the gold standard.
Right.
Now, I know people use other logs and they're perfectly happy with them. I just like CQR log because it really does have just about everything. You know, you don't even have to use half of it to realize that, you know, wow, it does that too. You know, it has a built-in, you know, handling for creating the ADIF files for export. In fact, it has, you know, a direct linking to a trusted QSL. So you basically click a button and all it does is pop up for your password for your signing your file. If you're smart enough to put a password on your certificate that you got from Logbook of the World, and then it's boom, it sends it off automatically. You don't have to go to the website and upload it, do anything manual. It does the exact same thing with EQSL. It pushes it up with your authentication privileges.
And I will say that if you're going to use EQSL for any of this, you definitely want to use an API interface to EQSL, because the web interface to EQSL is horrifying.
Yeah.
It is horrifying. So
yeah, I actually haven't been on the website in so long. The only time I go to the website is to get my password.
It's not even web 1.0. It's like web 0.1. It's kind of like GeoCities type web. Yeah. So yeah,
without all the blinking. It doesn't have blinking.
So it does not have blinking, but it's damn close.
Don't give them that idea though. Right. I said that. So CQR log will also upload to Club Log. I think it also does HRDNet. I'm not sure about QRZ, but I know it does the Club Log and HRDNet automatically as well. And that can happen right after you do a contact. So EQSL and Logbook of the World, because you normally batch load that stuff, they don't want to see a contact at a time. Those are actually reserved, and you have separate buttons at the top of the screen for those. But you can set up Club Log and HRDNet to go automatically every time you make a contact. And those services consume those just as is, and they like it that way. They want to consume stuff one at a time, because processing big log files is slightly temperamental to do that. Plus, CQR Log does fully interface with programs like WSJTX and FLDigi. It can operate those programs in remote mode, which basically means it's sucking in the log from WSJTX when you click, you know, log QSO now. It'll just go right in, and same thing with FLDigi. You know, you press the little enter button or whatever that little icon is. I think it looks like an enter key myself. And then it goes right into your CQR log. So you don't have to maintain a log in WSJTX and a log in FLDigi and then import those back into your program that automatically does all that stuff. That's why I say it's kind of the full featured thing. The next one on our list is a PyLog. This one is got a lot of activity. I think over the last time I did a GitHub and in the Ham Shack, it was on the list for updates. It's a great little logger, and it's getting more and more features as it goes. So, you know, keep an eye out for this one. This one could be the new gold standard as soon as I adopt it. I think that's
right. As soon as you start using it, it'll be the one we talk about most. Right? CQR yes. log will just get pushed into the trash bin.
Yeah,
and we'll never talk about it at all. Sorry, Peter.
Yeah. You know, if it wasn't written in Pascal, I would probably help out with it because
I'd have to dig way back.
I would like to add on to it, but right. Every time I open up the editor in Pascal, I just kind of, you know, throw up in my mouth a little.
I'd have to go back to my early college days to even remember what Pascal was like, because those were the two programming languages I first learned first, Pascal and Fortran. Yeah, and that's Dark Ages type stuff right there.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's quite advanced. It doesn't remind me of the Pascal that I back then. You know, it's definitely more modern. You know, probably more revisions since, you know, whatever, 30 years ago or something like that. Anyway,
so we've passed the Hercules CGA chipset at this point. So
yes, we're way out of there. So yeah, PyLog, you know, keep an eye out for it. You know, it has everything you need to do logging and everything else. And you know, if you run WSJTX or FLDigi, you can just easily just save your log and those and import it back into PyLog. And they have a great and simple import interface, and it'll merge the log right in there with it, so you don't have any problems with that. And then you could write out to your ADIF file, and then you'll have to sign it with trusted QSL. Or, you know, go up to the EQSL website and kind of squint your eyes a little bit so it looks like it's all shiny and new, and click the upload button there. The next one is XLog. It's fairly basic. I think it has everything you need, though. I haven't used XLog in quite a while, but I remember it having ADIF format and everything else. And a lot of these also can handle Cabrillo format. So if you used a contest logger or something like that, you can also bring that in and then turn it into an ADIF.
XLog just basically uses the X11 dev type stuff, so it doesn't require anything fancy to run. And it is simple, but it's also simplified, so it's very easy to use. It looks old and clunky, but it's also a great lightweight logger. I mean, CQR log actually requires some processing power just to run itself.
Well, it requires MySQL running. So.
Right. You actually have to have a database backend. Yeah, but XLog is much lighter weight.
Is much lighter weight too.
Right. So we, like when we're at Hamvention and stuff like that, we'll demo those as opposed to CQR log, although we do demo CQR log as well. But they're just much simpler to get up and running and easier to use. So,
yeah.
I mean, because CQR log has so many features that you can just blow your head off, you know, trying to figure out everything.
Yeah, it took me like 6 videos to show it all. So, you know, yeah. You definitely check out our YouTube channel on that, and you can see everything that I got to work with CQR log just to see what I'm talking about. You can use applications that have their own logging. So let's say you're a WSJTX user. Those files, they do have an export to ADIF. You could use that as your logger if it's the only thing you use. You know, let's say you're an FTA guy and that's all you use. So, sorry, I was reading the chat room. You were doing that answer. And I was like, oh, it's movie. So yeah, I mean that you can do itself, have the ADIF file. So let's say you're only doing FT8. Fine. Do it FT8, you know, use that, export the ADIFs, sign it with trusted QSL, send it up to logbook of the world and retain those ADIFs, save those as a backup. You don't want to lose those files. FLDigi, they have a built-in logger as well. I think the FL log program is available as a separate module in Linux. I haven't used it in quite a while, but I know it's basically what FLDigi will log to if you have nothing else. So it has its own built-in logger, and it's full-featured. You can even use it as a contest logger and whatnot. And you would want to, again, export at ADIF. I don't think there's built-in support for, you know, exporting directly to Logbook of the World through Click Easy Button or EQSL. So all that stuff would have to be more manual. And yeah, as we went down the list, that's kind of, you know, the whole thing is you're going to be manual. And that's not a bad thing, but it's just going to require you to do a little extra work to get that contact back up into the shared, you know, into the cloud, the mysterious cloud of internet stuff. And those interwebs.
Right, the logger of things.
Yeah, the logger of things. So I also put Tuknak in here just because it sounds cool and I always like to say that. it's just a contest logger. I know it exports in Cabrillo format, which of course you can turn back into ADIF pretty easy with something else. And I think it does do export to ADIF. I'd have to confirm that. But for contest logging, yeah, it's a pretty slick little logger. I'm always quite impressed with it. You know, it reminds me of the old CP days and stuff like that of contest logging. The last one I have listed here is one we talked about already is LibreOffice Calc. So if you just really want to have your pen and paper, you know, this is a way for you to have your pen and paper. You can actually have a spreadsheet. And there are some websites, I'll have to research that a little bit, but I remember seeing places where you could take a CSV file, which is basically what you're creating with the Excel or, you know, Calc spreadsheet, and turn that into an ADIF by basically just mapping the columns and saying, you know, this is the QSO, this is my station, person I contacted, signal report, band, mode, and stuff like that. So as long as you've defined all those columns in your spreadsheet, that would be a complete logging solution. There's no reason why you can't use that. I mean, you know, I know people that still use Excel for logging and, you know, Calc for logging. You know, some people are more comfortable doing it that way. They don't want to program. They don't want to get into, you know, doing some stupid HRD Deluxe or something, you know, terrible like that, you know, because they haven't found Linux.
Right. And since ADF is basically like XML, it's very easy to convert a CSV file and just basically surround everything with the appropriate tags and you have ADF format. It's really not that hard to convert.
No, and I think you could probably even Google around a little bit or, you know, DuckDuckGo around a little bit and find those macros that you can load into LibreOffice and actually generate an ADIF, you know, natively from Calc itself. I know I've done some XML writes from spreadsheets before, and it's pretty easy code. So you're not doing a lot of hardcore coding and stuff like that. So anything else we can think about our deep dive here into logging? I know we touched on a lot of topics and software and sharing and stuff like that. Anything you can think of?
Well, I think we might be able to summarize a little bit. I think it's important to use a logger that you're comfortable with. I mean, I would definitely try a few of them, see which ones work for you, and especially work or maybe integrate directly with the applications you use. You want to keep something that has a very standardized format, so that no matter where you're logging from, you can consolidate and upload to wherever you need to be. You probably need to be a part of some online conglomeration of logs, whether it be Logbook of the World, EQSL, you know, Club Log, or all of the above, because some people log exclusively to one or the other. And if you're especially chasing information and you want to keep as much of this, you know, confirmation rate up, you probably need to be at least a part of as many of them as possible. And they're all basically free to access, except for, you know, having to throw a few bucks here and there, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah, if you want the award or the piece of paper.
Right. So, I mean, all of this is pretty low cost, and they do, you know, presumably they have good backed up copies and everything, but you always want to make sure you keep your own so that, you know, in case of disaster, you have some way to recover. And I would highly recommend on your own logs that you make sure that you have lots of copies in multiple physical locations. If you can do that, maybe just get a cheap storage VPS up at like DigitalOcean or something and just keep your logs there as well as on your home box, just so you have a secondary copy somewhere. Because as long as you have the information in a format like ADIF, you can always recreate and re-upload and you know, add back into applications if you have to reinstall and stuff like that. So you always want to have that information available if you can.
And that reminds me, you know, you could even have your logging program up in the cloud. You know, we talked about, what was it, Cloud Log was one of them?
Yes.
And there was one other.
There was another one. I can't remember what it was either.
But there are solutions where, yeah, you could spin up a box in the cloud and have it basically, you know, be your logger, and it'll also do ADIF and everything else. And so I'll add a cloud log to that list, and I'll look up the other one too. I just can't remember off the top of my head if that's the one that we both installed.
Was there like a PHP log or something like that? There is
a PHP logger. I think the last time we looked at the last release, I basically said, nah.
Yeah. I wanted to write one of those.
A little bit more polish on it. I mean, it's still usable. Don't take me wrong. I mean, you know, especially if you're the author, don't take me wrong. It's just not something that I would use, you know. You know, throw a Bootstrap on it, make it look new, and then call it good. Yeah, CloudLog is really good. It has mapping and everything else. It's pretty slick. I think that's Peters, isn't it? 2E0, QSL, 2E0 QSL, something like that.
We could look it up. Cheryl's supposed to be the one who...
Yeah, Cheryl, look that up.
She's supposed to be Googling all that stuff.
Yeah,
She's getting sidetracked. You're supposed to be Googling CloudLog.
CloudLog. I'm learning about the Silhouette Cameo right now.
You're supposed to be participating in our program right now. You have all afternoon and all evening to work with your cameo.
My brain is fried at this point.
All right, so find our web-based loggers. One's CloudLog, and there's another one, and neither of us can remember what it is right now. So while we're doing that,
CloudLog is Pete's 2E0 QSL.
2E0 QSL, right? So that's
cloudlog.co.uk. It's a PHP and MySQL application. And yeah, it's sexy. Has a cat control and stuff like that you can load on the local computer. It's pretty slick.
Which, by the way, is really cool. Having a remote interface with a local actual connection to your rig. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, check those out. And yeah, you know, if you're not logging, you should probably log.
That's one thing we didn't talk about, actually, is that you might want to find a logger or choose a logger that actually uses your rig interface to get information.
Oh, that's true.
So you don't have to enter, for example, the frequency you're on, because it's pulling it directly from the radio while you're doing it. And most of these will do that automatically, so you don't have to really worry about it.
Yeah. Almost all these use Hamlib, or they have their built-in connectivity to it, but I think almost all these use Hamlib as an option. And we just did our last long topic on Hamlib, so go back and rewind back to that episode if you don't use Hamlib and want to use Hamlib, so you don't have to enter what station or what frequency your radio is on when you make the call. It makes it so much more pleasant. Yeah. To log contacts, especially when you get into radio sport, it becomes a little bit more critical, because you know, they're slowly getting away. It's taken many years, but you know, with the advent of cat control and it being the standard now for all rig interfacing and stuff like that, they're slowly getting away from your ability to confirm contacts just based on band and mode. You know, it's yeah, you can't just say 14.2 megahertz and SSB for, you know, 300 contacts in the contest. You know, they want to actually know which frequency, because their matching algorithms are working on that stuff now, because, you know, hey, there are some people that do cheat.
What are you talking about? No one cheats at this.
Oh, it's gotten so excessive now that, you know, some guys even have to record. Like, if you're in the top five, you better have audio for everything.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. If you're in the big contest like CQ Worldwide or something like that, I'm fairly certain you have to have an audio transcript of everything.
Oh, how much fun. Nice. So Cheryl has found some information, I think.
Yeah, okay. There's CloudLog.
Yes, we knew that one.
Right. And there's Log4OM.
Oh, Log4OM. Yes, I remember that one.
Does that one run on Linux?
Yes. Oh, that's Windows one, actually, isn't it?
Yes,
that's Windows. Is it?
Yeah, I believe Log4OM is Windows.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Now, you can run that with Crossover or Wine, most likely, much like N1MM. You can kind of get it working. Yeah, I would not recommend that.
No, there's specifically a web-based one like CloudLog that we're not able to bring up.
Yeah, right. And it's very similarly named as CloudLog. It's something similar. But yeah, it doesn't matter. It's fine. So yeah, so if you're not logging, log. If you have a logger, you know, make sure it's connected to your rig, and make sure your rig can connect to the log. So there you go.
All right. So let's just take a quick poll of the chat room. We do have quite a few folks in there who are talking. We have WA0EIR, VE2HS, and let's see, who else do we have in there? We have BX8AAD and
KF7IJZ.
KF7IJZ. Yep.
And that's all I see. Well, yeah, John the Nice Guy there. But, well, that was earlier today.
Yeah, that was earlier. He is gone now. So, but does anyone have anything else they would like to add on the topic of logging before we jump into our announcements and feedback for this week? Or
K-Log?
No, K-Log is just K-Log.
Yeah, that's KDE, I think. That was an older one.
Yeah, it says for Linux, OS X, and Windows. So Linlog.
Yeah. Nope. maybe we'll dig it up later and put it
in the show notes.
In the show notes, yeah.
Yeah, there's also a one that stands alone in like an Electron app too, so I'll find that one as well. We've covered these before on the show, so you can dig through our previous episodes and find them as well. So let's get on to announcements and feedback.
All right, very good. That was quite a deep dive into logging. Hopefully somebody will pull an interesting or useful nugget out of all of that. So we'll move on to a couple of announcements first, and those would be upcoming HamFests that we will probably be at. We are not 100% confirmed on these, but I have been asked to do a talk at the Ors HamFest. That's the Ozark Area Radio Society. That's the one that's right here 5 minutes from my house. That one is going to be on March 24th, which is a Saturday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., and I'm not sure what I'll be doing a presentation on, but I'll guess I'll something. Think of something between now and then. So, I mean, I did a basic intro to Linux in the Ham Shack the first time around. I don't know that I want to repeat that, so I'll figure something out.
You could do Linux in the Ham Shack 2.0 or
maybe I'll just play a transcript of the deep dive into logging.
There you go.
There you go. That'll put them to sleep. Come take a nap in the air conditioning. Listen to our logging episode.
Yeah, hopefully to be heat. Yeah. Last year, I think it was sleeting. Or the year before, one or the other. So,
Great. The next one will be in April of this year in Claremore, Oklahoma. That's the Green Country Ham Fest. We were there last year, and they've asked us to be there again this year and given us the opportunity to have our same booth and all of that. So we might just show our faces at the Green Country Ham Fest. But even if we don't, you can show up there on the 13th and 14th. Of April. The Friday night is from 4 to 9 p.m. and the Saturday is from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. and hopefully we'll be able to make it out there for that. So maybe we'll see you all there. And then we have quite a bit of feedback this time, so we'll talk about the first one we got, which is from Joe K0NEB. And
the cat in the hat.
Yeah, he is the cat in the hat. If you've ever been to Hamvention, you see him wandering around with an antenna stuck out of his cat in the hat.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think I just turned myself down.
I
guess I'm back to where I went. Yeah, it sounded the same. All right. I started playing around with buttons and I shouldn't do that. So anyway, Joe asks, do you have a distro available that has the latest version of WSJTX pre-installed? I was thinking of repurposing a couple of older laptops to run FT8. Thanks. 73-day K0NEB, Joe. The cat in the hat. I don't know. I turned Joe into Kevin somehow.
Joe Eisenberg.
Yep. So, and I don't know of one that actually has the very latest version of WSJTX pre-installed, unless you want to use Ubuntu and install the PPA, because that's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't even have to do that, really. I mean, just get any of the latest distros. Doesn't matter which one. Whichever one will run on whatever you're putting it on. So those older laptops might need, like, LXDE or something like that, or some lower graphical user interface Linux. And just download, you know, stick with Debian. Make it easy on yourself. Get a Debian install. Get a Ubuntu. Get, you know, Linux Mint. Any Debian-based or Ubuntu-based system. Would be ideal, and then just go to the WSJTX site and download the Debian, the DEB file for your platform, and you're off to the races.
He was hoping for something that was already pre-installed that didn't require any extra work, but again, I don't think we know of anything that actually fits that bill.
I don't think the latest version is in any of the in the repos right now.
Yeah, I don't believe so either. So,
and I don't even. I'm running 18.04 here now beta. And let me just do a quick search on that, because it should be here, WSJTX.
it is one notable problem with keeping things in a repository because they are not necessarily right up to date.
No, no. So WSJTX is, yeah, still running an older version in Bionic. So I don't know if that's going to get updated as well. Yeah, best thing to do if you don't want to mess around with PPAs and all that, you know, typing stuff that I did, you can just go direct to the, you know, to the Joe Taylor's website there and click the download WSJTX, find the one that says, you know, 1.8 or whatever the latest version is, you know, for AMD64.deb, and you can install that directly into any Debian-based system pretty quickly. I don't think there's many requirements, and if there is, as long as you use like the graphical installer like GW or whatever one comes with the particular system you chose, it should go ahead and grab all the dependencies for it, so you don't have to really think about that. And you should be off pretty quick. It's very painless, very, very painless.
I would tend to agree. So hopefully that's useful information. And sorry, Joe, we couldn't provide you one that already has it pre-installed, but it's really easy to get, super easy.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, I don't know how to do this next one. I guess I'm going to try and do it exactly the way it's written.
Good luck with that.
So this was a comment on episode number 203, which was our episode on choosing a Linux distribution. And
I think we're both sick.
I'm still trying to figure out what the nature of this is, but I think I have an idea. So the comment goes like this. Quite literally, that is what the comment is.
You know, we're really trying to lessen our amount of editing in this podcast. So we're allowing certain things to slide through. In the interest of getting more content to you more rapidly. So, yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. So the only thing that's interesting to me about this comment is who made it. The person who made this comment is H.J. Liu. And I don't know, do you all know who H.J. Liu is? Because I do.
Oh, I don't.
H.J. Liu is the person who created Yggdrasil Linux. Way, way, way,
way back.
we're talking before Slackware. This is
there was real. Something before Slackware?
Yes, there was. And Yggdrasil was one of those things.
That was something we discussed in one of our meetups that we used to do.
Now, I don't know if he's suggesting that we should be looking at Yggdrasil as a Linux in the Ham Shack distribution, because I'm pretty sure it's been dead for 15 years. but I don't know. I guess we'll just leave it there, because I have nowhere to go with that.
I know there was one of those that we were both sick, and yeah, it was painful to do the podcast, let alone probably listen right. to it. I do listen to all of them over again, so
yes, I do as well.
But the coughs go a lot quicker when you listen to it faster.
Yes, yes, yeah. I always listen at 1.5
they
speed.
They tend not to last quite as long,
right? All right, so we have a couple of simple ones here. So Cheryl, you want to read these? So
let me get back
to the Etherpad, right?
Sorry.
Oh, she's on Google, though.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No, I think she's still in silhouette mode.
No. I was actually looking at Yggdrasil. She's Googling.
Okay. So, something right. in the chat.
Yeah. So the next one is a comment on episode 206 from Chris K9CAB. It says, do you happen to have a Google Hangout or Slack room for this show? Chris K9CAB.
And the answer to that is we do not. We do not have a Slack room or a Google Hangout. We record via Mumble. And when we do our weekenders, we open up the Mumble to folks who want to just jump in and chat if they want to do that. And we also have our IRC channel, which is Octothorpe LHS Podcast on the Freenode Network. And all of that information is in the outro. So you can check that out. We do have a channel over on Discord, which Bill set up, but we don't really use it. So
yeah,
and once in a blue moon, we have done a Google Hangout.
Yes.
Very blue.
But that will be announced ahead of time, like on right. Twitter or something like that, if we're going to actually do a video hangout. So you'll know about it if we do.
Yeah.
All right. So the next one.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay, so our next one is a comment as well on episode 206 from Taryon KD9ILI. He says, I sure do enjoy the deep dives. New ham and new to Linux.
That's very good. I had to look him up today to find out what his call sign was. I actually did some investigation. He was being kind of cryptic, but I found him. And he was licensed in April of 2017. So he is a new ham. So thanks for tuning into the program, and we're glad you like the new deep dives and the new format. And we're glad you're getting into Linux and ham radio. It's fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah.
So we also have a Google Plus comment from the Mountain RN. So apparently he's a nurse in the hills of someplace.
Somewhere.
That could be anywhere.
Now, his English was fairly broken, so I'm guessing the mountain we're speaking of is not in the United States. I cleaned it up as best I could. And he says, recently installed Linux Mint on a Toughbook, been inspired by your show. While trying to play with my ICOM ID 888-880H with Chirp, here's what happened. And what happened was he was running Chirp, and then all of a sudden his X display just went like absolutely crazy. And it blew up, I guess.
That's not good.
He says it uses a 9-pin cable for the data. And the video he posted was on Google Plus, but it's not public, so you can't really see it. And I did see it, and no one else really saw it here. So I don't have any idea what what happened there, but it was definitely weird. It looked more like an X Windows video issue than any issue with Chirp. I can't imagine that the Chirp program actually affected the video in any way.
Unless there's some grounding issue or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. It's a weird issue, and I don't really have an answer, so I apologize.
I think it goes like TTL level out to the radio through the pins. So, you know,
right.
Yeah, there's not a lot of the voltage or anything else going there, but I've had some weird things happen with the video stuff that's unrelated to the actual installation. I actually blew up a Odroid by plugging it into a bad monitor that had some voltage running on the HDMI cable on the outside.
Well, so there, it might be worth actually checking that cable just to see if there's some oddness going on there.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of, is some kind of interaction grounding issue or something like that. I mean, but it'd be so minuscule, I wouldn't think, you know, if anything, it'd be coming from the video cable, you know, because that's where the most power is driving down that cable. So,
Don't give up on it, though. Keep trying to use Chirp with your handheld and everything. It's worth the effort, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I mean, you do have voltages off that serial port. You do have, like, you know, I think there is 12 volts out the back there, maybe five.
Yeah, depending on the pin, yes.
Yeah, depending on the pin. So, I mean, you could have a short in the cable, and that would be a problem,
too. It could definitely be a problem, yes.
Yeah, and that would freak everything out, because you'd have voltage coming back at TTL levels, and that wouldn't be good. So yeah, I check cabling, and hopefully you didn't blow anything up, permanently there. And good luck with that Chirp.
Yep. So don't give up on it. Keep trying. And finally, we have an episode 206 comment from John Kilo 2 Zulu Alpha, who says, the new format is great. Like it so much, I pledged on Patreon. You guys were talking about serial port permissions. Here's another tip. When using /dev/TTY USB, whatever, USB devices are enumerated in the order they're plugged in. Now, I will add something here. That is, if you boot up with USB devices plugged in, they should, although I've noticed that sometimes they don't, enumerate in the same order every time. Now, it's mostly likely, but not 100% likely.
Yeah, I know. I was going to come in back and touch on that topic because I ran into the same problem. I relied on the TTY names, and they all changed after I rebooted.
Right, and that can happen, especially if you do a kernel upgrade, because sometimes...
Especially if you unplug stuff, like, because, I plug my radios and I plug it into another computer and do that stuff. So stuff changes,
right?
And it's kind of a pain in the butt. And he mentions here the dev serial ID, the very long ID string, which not everything uses that. And I found that CQR log does not like those. And it's probably because... he doesn't have enough length in that storage field or something like that, because some of those IDs could be extremely, extremely long.
However, if that's in fact a problem with the front end application, you could create a link somewhere else to the long serial name with a shorter one.
There's a better way to do it.
Okay. Well, let me finish with this.
That's what I want to get to.
Right. Let me finish his comment, yeah, go then ahead. You can get. So, but what he says basically is if you want to not have to worry about the enumeration order of the USB ports, you can actually use the serial device ID directory path, which is /dev/serial/by-id/the-id string, which will always find the right USB device on the file system and not worry about enumeration order. And then you can just use that whenever you need to reference the USB port in question. And then he finishes up with 7.3 and keep up the good work. John, Kilo 2 Zulu Alpha. So that is a good tip. And Bill's going to tell us why it doesn't always work.
Well, I'm not saying why it doesn't always work, but I'm saying there's a better way. You can actually reserve those TTY USB numbers to specific devices. And you could map those with UDEV. And you can set that up. I'm going to do, I have to do my box. So I'm probably going to do a quick little video on it, on how to do it and how to set it up. It's super easy. Basically, you can, if you do an LS USB on your box, you can actually see all the serial numbers that you need. You need the manufacturer's ID, which is like the first four characters of that ID. And there's the last four characters is the individual ID of the unit. So if you had like the same type of device, you know, have the same first set of numbers and the last set of numbers will be different, or number letter combinations. You can actually set it up so, like, you know, when I plug in my ICOM, you know, transceiver, it's always on USB 0. You can actually set that up. So you never have to, you know, worry about changing them on a certain system. So if you have all your software configured, you don't have to come back in and change it because, you know, you rebooted or you pulled the device off and plugged it into a different port or, you know, whatever. You know, there's so many things that can happen that can change it. And it does get frustrating. Right. And like I say, the long IDs, the dev serial by ID, does work in some applications, but it does not work in CQR log, at least from my experience.
Right. So you can just create a UDEV rule to assign it a static.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is really what they recommend doing for serial devices that you constantly use and pull off and stuff like that. You know, if you always are using them, but they're not always connected, and you don't want to change your software and stuff like that, and let's say your particular application doesn't support the long IDs, you can reserve them in the conf file. And so every time it boots up, you know, and you plug that device in, you can plug, you know, zillions of different devices in, and that one will always get those IDs, and those become reserved. So basically another device can't come and be TTY USB 0 or TTY USB 1, 2, 3, whatever. And I think that's the ideal way to set it up, at least for our perspective when we do ham radio and rig cat control, because we kind of want that stuff to be fairly static in the applications.
All right, so look for a YouTube video from Bill on setting up UDEV rules. That'll be actually pretty handy, I think.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Well, that means we're down to the end of announcements and feedback, and we're down to the end of our deep dive into ham radio logging. So that means
We have one more announcement?
Do we have one more announcement? Did I not scroll down far enough?
They're going to find you on a podcast soon, aren't they?
Oh, I kind of forgot about that. Yeah. I will be I was a guest, and I will be a guest when it's released to the general public on the Admin podcast, and I was on what will become episode number 62, and I don't have a release date for when that will actually be put out. It was recorded on Sunday, and I don't know what their cycle is as far as getting the post-production done and putting that out, but I believe the website is like adminpodcast.co.uk, something like that.
Yeah, and you can find it within any podcast,
any podcast
software. Right. You can just search it up and it'll be there.
Right. So I talked about my job and as a systems administrator or a DevOps engineer or whatever you want to call what I do. And that's basically what the podcast is about. It's a podcast for DevOps, basically. So, but I was on it. So if you want to hear me more about then I guess you can tune into the Admin podcast.
If you don't get enough of Russ.
Yeah, if you don't get enough of me. There. Yeah. Yeah, so no one's going to listen to it. I get it. You guys are such a barrel of monkeys. But it's also hosted by one of our listeners, John, G7VRI. So that's why I got the nod to be on that particular program. So
Inside track.
Yeah. All right, so there we go. We're down to the bottom. So we've been going really long. These deep dives get deeper and deeper the more we talk about them. So anyway, I'm going to push the outro button, and we'll see you for the rescheduled Weekender, which is going to be this Thursday instead of last Thursday. So Check that out, and we'll give you some good stuff to do for this upcoming weekend. And with that, 70. Bill, go ahead, sign out.
Yep, 73.
All right. And Cheryl?
Good night, everyone.
All right, we'll catch you next time. See ya.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net:8008/LHS Live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.